forage wild apples that have been long forgotten, blended together with select varieties at Preservation Orchard, fermented with both wild yeast and cultured. Shoot, these are just some of my favorite things at Carr Cider House. So settle back and enjoy this here episode 331 of Cider Chat as we speak to both Nicole Bloom and Jonathan Carr of Carr Cider House. Hey, 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 my name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. How are you doing out there, Ciderville? I know if you were in the Southern Hemisphere, I saw some folks playing in New Zealand in the snow. Not that they get a lot of snow like I would in New England, but there was snow there. That was pretty cool to see. But meanwhile, up here in the Northern Hemisphere, it has been hot. A nice cool jug of water in my refrigerator, keeping me hydrated, ending the evening with a little bit of cider. It's just the way I get through the summer. So I hope it's going well for you and that you're able to stay in the groove, stay healthy, because what an action-packed fall we have ahead. So I'm going to tell you a bit about that, what I did last week when I come back from this little quick pause. Last week in episode 330, I was talking about Apple Camp, which is going to be taking place in just a couple weeks here in August, and that takes place up in Maine. By the way, they are totally booked for Apple Camp. So start planning now for next year because you know that Apple Camp will take place again and you don't want to miss it. You know, even some of the recordings that I'm going to be doing there, that will inform you and give you some of the info, but being at Apple Camp, I can't wait. Anywho, also on last week's episode, I was talking about how I was headed to New Jersey because I was going to have an interview on site at Laird's and Company, which is the oldest distillery in America, dating back to 1698. And then in 1780, they got their actual first commercial license. And I can't even tell you what it was like to walk up to a door that has number one on it from the Internal Revenue Service type of thingy, because they were the first licensed distillery. Yeah, I mean, the place was just dripping with Applejack, of course, because that's what they're renowned for. Just delicious variations of apple brandy. Oh, and history everywhere. It was insanely amazing. Just insanely amazing. It kind of reminds me of visiting Patrice, who we're going to be seeing on the upcoming French Cider Tour. He is 13th generation on the farm that we're going to. You don't meet that every day. You just don't. I mean, talk about like 100-year companies. When you're talking 300-plus year companies, that's a whole different ballgame. And you know that that family's doing something right to be able to keep folks interested and engaged. And so they were just so inviting, just lovely, lovely people. I just had a wonderful time. So that's going to be rolling out, that episode with Lisa and then her son, Gerard. I recorded some with Larry Lairs, her father. And though he is retired, he says at least, he was just barreling around there doing everything. And I just love the fact that he said, you know, I'm not a scientist. I just know when it's right. And he's talking about tasting the brandy when it's right, or the Applejack. Really, I'm kind of like walking on a cloud from that experience. So that's super cool. And one of the reasons why I was down there is because it's always been on my bucket list to get there. I mean, who wouldn't want to go to Laird's and Company and speak to them, especially if you are a total Applehead and cider fan. And actually, there's big news on that. I'll break it right now. In fact, they are going to be releasing a cider that has been aged in their barrels. Fireworks. Did your head just explode? Mine did. figuratively speaking, right? When I heard that, that was insane. So we'll talk a little bit more about that when I release that episode. But come on, does that look good for not only their business, but the cider industry overall here in the U.S. and even abroad? That is huge, baby. That is huge, huge, huge news. And it couldn't be better. So, wow. I'm just trying to exhale through it all because it is just sucking the wind out of my chest when I hear such awesome news, meet awesome people, and have so much to look forward to, which is kind of a nice way to set up your life when you can, right? It's kind of keep it on the positive, which we're always doing here on Cider Chat. And by the way, if this is new to you, if this is your first time listening to Cider Chat, I would love to personally welcome you right now into this amazing conversation with so many people worldwide. There's just so many makers that I've had the pleasure and privilege of talking to, and so many yet to come who I've been able to feature on this podcast. Also, cider enthusiasts, folks who just love cider for the sake of cider, and farmers, orchardists. There's a lot of folks in the cider trade making it possible for all of us to get that apple into our glass. Right now in the Northern Hemisphere, there are apples being harvested. And they're really considered summer apples that are mostly used for eating. But soon, very soon, and maybe even now with some of these summer apples, you might be thinking, dang, I want to make some cider. You might be planning ahead for your fall cider making endeavors that are so soon. They're just going to be rolling out soon. And one of the main things that cider needs in order to transfer from being fresh pressed apple juice into a fermented drink is yeast. And one of the key folks who I am proud to say is a sponsor of this here podcast that offers cultured yeast for you and specific for cider makers is Fermentis. So whether you're working on a balanced, sweet, fruity, or crisp cider, Fermentis is the obvious choice for beverage fermentation. And they are now offering an expanding range of cider yeasts. So they have the right yeast for your favorite cider. Learn more about how Fermentis can improve the quality of your cider fermentation and for the latest on their exciting new product releases by going to Fermentis.com. I want to just back up a little bit before we get to our featured conversation with Carr Cider House and just fill everybody in on what's happening this coming November, because I'm getting a lot of inquiries coming my way all about Cider Days, which always takes place the first weekend of November in my special spot of Ciderville, which is Western Massachusetts. Yeah, it's bigger than Franklin County at this point, folks. It really is. And so those of you who have always kind of related to it as just like a Franklin County thing, it's always been bigger than that. In fact, we've had people coming in from international for many, many years. So we just have Cider Days, as I'm calling it. And coming up the week before Cider Days, again, which is the first weekend of November, we have Western Mass Cider Week. So I will be telling you about those events rolling up to that weekend. And on the weekend itself, Cider Chat is producing Cider Days 2.0. These are ticketed events. In addition to all what, you know, the local cideries and orchards are going to be doing, I do recommend you check out your favorite cideries in this region, see what they're doing, check it out. I'll be offering as I can and letting you know about those events. But Cider Days 2.0 is really the like a premier event happening. Coming next week on August 15th, we are going to be releasing the first set of tickets for the Calvados and American Apple Brandy Tasting. So if you haven't yet, I really want to implore you to sign up for eCider News, which will be coming out between now and then, and you will be notified when the tickets go live, and you'll also get a coupon code that allows you to get early release ticket pricing for that. That will only last up to September 1st. To sign up for eCider News, you can find a link in the show notes to this here episode 331, or just go to ciderchat.com and you'll see it on the sidebar. Sign up for eSider News. Just click that, fill in your detail, and you're good to go. And of course, my expectation is that this tasting is going to be sold out, because we are going to have on site Lisa Lairs Dunn at that tasting. We're going to have 4 Calvados tastings from France. Of course, Calvados is from France, so that's Normandy. Exquisite Calvados from Normandy. And then we're going to have 2 American apple brandies. And one is from Lairs & Company, and the other one is called Josiah Bartlett, and it's from Flag Hill Winery and Distillery. And that's in New Hampshire. So that's just a Calvados tasting. You get a little charcuterie plate with that. It's going to be mind-boggling, and that's with myself and Ambrosia Borowski presenting that and kicking off Cider Days 2.0. Then on November 5th, the following day, Saturday morning, we kick off with John Bunker. And if you don't know who John Bunker is, well, you are going to just fall for this guy. He is absolutely amazing. He's an author. He knows how to identify apples. He is behind Fedco Seed and Trees. Just, wow, another like outstanding individual, orcharding for homeowners. And then Lisa Laird Dunn, and she's going to be doing a presentation on the history of Applejack, and you'll be able to taste 3 of their brandies during that workshop. What better way to start off the morning, right? That evening, there's going to be the comeback of the cider dinner with 6 women producers, including Lisa of Lairs & Company, Judith Maloney of West County Cider, Louisa Spencer of Farnham Hill and Poverty Orchard, Eleanor Leger of Eden Specialty Ciders, Nicole Bloom, who is on the podcast coming right up, and Ann Garwood Hamp of Ragged Hill Cider. What an amazing time. And the meal planning, I've just been speaking with the caterer who's going to be setting this up, and we're infusing apples and cider and applejack into the meal plan. So on top of that, you know, you walk in. I'm going to not talk about that yet because those tickets will not go live until September. But you can start planning now, because dang, cider is back, and definitely cider is going up. Well, that's a lot of good news to kick off our featured conversation with the folks at Carr's Cider House. Carr's, by the way, is located in Hadley, Massachusetts, and we would consider that Western Mass. Each year, in fact, at Cider Days, they have their little kiosk there, which is open to the public, and it's a great place to stop by and pick up some Carr's, because they do not sell their cider online at this point. I always like to put in a little catch there, because you never know what the future will hold. And we are hoping that in 2023, in fact, I expect it. I know it's going to happen. They are going to have a tasting room up at their beautiful barn where we met outside to do this recording. I drove up this long road, a nice little dirt road that in the winter I walk up to go attend their wassail there out in the orchard. And you come up and they were sitting at the picnic table, had a beautiful ice bucket full of the 3 ciders that we were tasting, and also crackers and cheeses that were made there on the farm with their own milk there. And Nicole is just like slamming it. This is like a multi-faceted farm orchard experience, because they're not just in the cider venue. They're doing other things, which I think will be really informative for anyone thinking about getting into this industry, or someone who is in it right now kind of wondering about expanding. So we took a nice little journey talking about their past, and you're going to first hear from Jonathan Carr telling a little bit about where they began and how they came to Hadley. So without further ado, let's all grab a glass and join this chat with Jonathan Carr and Nicole Bloom of Carr Cider House, based in Hadley, Massachusetts.
We moved here in the early 2000s, and okay, we were farming over in Ireland, and we decided to leave because it was too rainy, even though we loved it.
In Ireland? Oh, yeah. What county were you in?
We were in County Meath, just north of Dublin, which is where Jonathan's dad is from. And Jonathan was born in Dublin, but so spent the weekends out in Meath I had no idea. Yeah. That's so cool. All the folks out in Ireland now are going to be like, woo woo.
Yeah, we planted a little orchard there, but yeah.
But then we left.
But then we left before they started bearing. But our neighbors are now hard cider producers in Ireland. They have a brand called Devil's Bit. And yeah, it's pretty cool.
Awesome. Yeah. I had no idea. Well, good. Yeah. Good. Even though I know you guys, I know I'm going to learn a lot here today, so I'm super stoked for that. How do you describe your farm overall? Like, what part is like what you're really feeling like that it's pulling us here? Where's the balance? How do you do that?
That's an interesting question.
Yep. Well, we were kind of talking about this earlier and like how best to describe it, but it's really like a kind of an evolution, because we did really buy this place with the intention of just essentially growing cider apples, but then we sold at a lot of farmers markets initially. And we decided we were really interested in like the history of not only hard cider, but like traditional things that we do with apples and how we make use of the juice and ferment it, or then turn the hard cider into vinegar. Or we discovered this amazing product that we didn't really know that much about before we moved to the area called boiled cider, which the Slow Food Ark of Taste has recorded the earliest known mention of it coming from the Hadley, Northampton area in the 1650s.
Oh, that's very neat.
So we decided to try making that. And
Can we stop there for a minute? Yeah. Let's talk about what is that? Because there's cider syrup. Is it the same thing?
It is. And we call ours cider syrup, but it's, I think more traditionally it's known as boiled cider, and it is just that. It's one ingredient. It's like cider boiled down till, you know, whatever, 70 bricks, like very sweet, like maple, and we make it in a maple evaporator actually, and yeah, it caramelizes a lot, and it's so it's sweet and it's tangy because it's juice, apple juice, you know, so unlike maple it's not just sweet, so it's really great for like sweet things, of course, you know, glazing a cake or whatever, but it's also so delicious in savory things like on a pork chop or even in a cocktail, like,
or pouring over a cheese. So we're gonna pour some right now on this beautiful goat cheese Nicole made.
Yeah. So this is actually apple juice that's boiled down. It's called cider syrup, but I just want to kind of clarify. It's not fermented apple juice. It is apple cider.
Of course, since you have people listening all over the world talking about cider, it's going to mean something different than Americans listening. Cider here can mean both the alcoholic drink and the sweet juice. But yeah, it's made from the sweet juice.
There you go. Yeah, that's
Thank you so much. Look at that. That's beautiful.
Yeah. You may have seen our goats when you were down at our.
I saw your dog. Which is beautiful. It's kind of Great Pier kind of.
The Great Pyrenees Anatolian sweetie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she's retired.
Oh, so this is your goat cheese right here.
It is. We have Nigerian dwarf goats that we milk just for home dairy.
Beautiful. Okay, well, chin chin. Okay,
yeah, there you go. Jaws.
Delicious.
Even like, you know, even when you're making hard cider, it's like there's a lot of, there's an educational component. And you're always having to tell people, you know, oh no, it's not sweet cider, it's fermented cider, or it's dry cider. That means when you taste it, it's not going to be sweet. And so anyway, it's just part of that whole, like when we're, and like shrubs, for instance, like, you know, people are like, what is a shrub? People show up at our farm stand trying to buy like small bushes.
This all kind of can come back to like talking about culture. What touchstones do we have here? Obviously, hard cider is a traditional drink in New England. And so culturally, there has been, you know, it's been part of the culture here. But then it disappeared, right? Or it really slowed down. And there are a few people that kind of carried it over. And certainly there was probably a lot of barrels in people's basements throughout. But like as a drink that people would like think to get or make or have through, you know, since, you know, the colonies until now, it definitely changed. And so it's like when we're thinking about all of the things that we want to make from the what we produce here on this farm, in a way it's like bringing back or helping to bring back, and there are a lot of other people around here doing it too, a culture, a food culture, a drink culture, like this is what we make here, this is what we can eat and drink here, and we love that aspect of it.
Yeah, right on. And this is delicious, you know, it really helps the
the cheese kind of like bounce a little bit, right? Because you have this like dichotomy between the cheese and the cider. It's just really, really delightful and fun.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah.
Fun, you know? Thanks. I mean, you like, who doesn't love playing with food?
Yeah, yeah.
And I could tell that you're absolutely, you know, in that stream, which is awesome. So you have the cider syrup as one of your value-added products, right? Shrubs. Let's talk about shrubs since you mentioned it.
Well, we were so excited to discover them because it was this this old traditional method of preserving the essence of fruit. You could take like a raspberry or a peach or and then you could get the juice from it and mix it or actually steep the fruit in vinegar. And then strain it out after it becomes infused with that flavor, and then sweeten it up a little bit with some sugar. And you don't need to refrigerate it, and it's so delicious. It really just captures that fruit flavor. Mm-hmm. And that's what, it's an old colonial technique. Mm-hmm. And people are just, I mean, rediscovering all these vinegar drinks and everything. So it falls like squarely in that category. And
I think it even goes back much further than the Americas, because I think it comes from the Middle East originally. Yeah.
Right. Well, that's, yeah, there's sort of a long history of that word. I think it's originally an Arabic word, like al-sharab.
One of the great things about doing the farmers markets is, you know, like all the people that we interact with, right? A lot of old timers would come through like switchel, and they'd be old, and like, my grandmother used to make switchel when we would go out to the farm and help them during hay season. And that one we make in our own way, and which is true of how people make switchel. They make it with the things that they have. So maybe they'll make it, sweetening it with molasses or with maple or with honey, and we sweeten it with cider syrup. So it's apple cider vinegar that's been infused with ginger and the cider syrup. So that's all concentrated in a bottle, and you can mix it up with your water. And it's like a sweet and sour ginger apple soda or drink or whatever. It's, yeah, really delicious.
And the story is that the ginger is there to settle your stomach, so you could be like chugging jugs of switchel while you made hay, and you wouldn't feel, you just keep going all day. Yeah.
The cider syrup is in a format of 375 milliliter bottle. Switchel, how are you selling that? In
same size?
Way. Okay. Yep.
And then we have our fruit shrubs are in a different bottle, but it's
still 375.
375, yeah.
And people add that to like cocktails.
Yeah.
And it's like a bitter. Yeah.
Yeah, because you got that nice acidity, and then you have the fruity complexity.
Yeah, we just made a blackberry mulberry shrub, which we did a very short run, like sold out immediately. But it's like you can just play around with all these flavors. It's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We imagined this place would just be planted up in apples. Since then, have, you know, decided to diversify in all sorts of ways, and one of the ways is different fruits. So we'd have a new berry field that we've just started. You can't see it from here; it's down on the other side.
Okay,
and by the pond.
Wow.
Yeah, because let's be honest. Apples are finicky. Apples are closely related to roses, which are also really finicky. And these are plants that every insect, small mammal, and large mammal in the world either want to eat, rub, jump on, or do something
devour in some kind of way.
Not to mention the climate,
I was going to say the evil spirits that we try to, like, you know, push out of here every wassail, but you know, maybe that's what we're talking about.
There's no evil spirits here.
No way.
Right. But it's like, okay, and we're like philosophically not that comfortable with spraying chemicals, and we understand why.
That's like an understatement.
I went to grad school at UMass to study fruit science, and all these like modern disease-resistant apples were like, you know, Gold Rush and Liberty and the whole PRI series, like Priscilla and Surprise and blah, 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 all pushed as like really great apples to reduce your spray. But like in practice, I find that there's still apples that need like a little coddling. And it's like these old-fashioned ones that are truly the vigorous, time-tested ones that come before the industrial spray era.
So which ones are you talking about there in terms of the...
Baldwin, for
classic
instance.
Classic one for this
Absolutely.
Region.
Absolutely, yeah. Rhode Island Greening or, russet, any russet, like a Roxbury russet.
And our Golden Russet Black is awesome.
So anyway, this was like an interesting discovery, but it's been like a frustrating one too, because and we're dealing this season with fire blight, which is like rampaging through our White Jersey block. We lost about half our Dabonettes a couple of years ago. And so, but these are English apples, and so they're not fire blight selected. So we got to be smart and like plant at this point due to like climate change. We got to plant southern apples, right?
Yes, that's true.
Grimes, I'm grafting. It's coming. Grimes Golden.
It's coming.
Yeah. Virginia crab.
Yeah. And we're interested in limber twigs, which have also done really well down at our in our test orchard, which is down at the home farm, and. Yeah, interesting crabs, for sure.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
So, yeah, so, I mean, it's challenging. But anyway, this is all to go back to what Nicole was saying about, like, we decided, it's like, let's diversify. Mm-hmm. Not only have we diversified in our, like, our offerings of products, but it's like...
You kind of did, though. I mean, you really have nice diversification. And, you know, and we haven't even hit it all yet, right?
No.
Not all of it. Mm-hmm. Right. So we, you're looking down here to the left at our chestnut... block, which has been like really wonderful too. Goes great with cider. So great with cider.
Well, this fall we have big plans. We're in the process of getting a pouring permit from the town to open up here, and hopefully we're gonna have like roast chestnuts and hard cider and picnic tables. You can have a view of the valley and kick back on a nice day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Pears. Heart nuts, Japanese walnut.
What kind of pears are you growing here?
Mostly kefir.
Don't laugh at me.
Why?
Kefir's been described to me as the Ben Davis of pears.
Oh.
Which is not a compliment.
No.
But.
We disagree.
Good.
They're bulletproof. They're so vigorous and happy and generous with their fruit.
Right on. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what it's all about, right? Yeah. Find out what your land delivers and meet it where it tells you to go.
Totally.
So you also have goats.
We do have goats. And currently they're down at our home farm. They'll be coming up to this new silvopasture block that we have over here. And we can talk a little more about silvopasture because it's becoming a big part of our management here, along with our friends Matt and Rachel of Meadow Fed Lamb, who are establishing some of them and strip grazing their sheep. That they have for meat and for wool, and really great for our orchards, delivering a lot of nutrients. And
yeah, it's great. We save on diesel and mowing labor and everything like that. And then we're putting back less like precision amounts of fertility all across the land. And we've just really seen a change in like the lushness around here ever since they've started grazing here a few years ago. Yeah.
And the fact that you're getting these cheeses, I mean, I'm feeling like I'm in Europe.
Yeah, well, these are a real European style. This one's a bloomy rind with ash and...
a crottin.
Well, that one's a real little one, so a crottin.
You guys are growing in leaps and bounds. I think you also, like, you renovated your press, too, didn't you? Like, kind of recently.
You know what? I realized one of our sales, and one you might have been to, was before we fixed up the barn here, and, like, the roof was leaking, and the floors were crooked, and I remember somebody looked up, and he's like... your ceiling is myceliating. And I'm like, I have to fix the roof. And you're right. Good eye.
I mean, really, it's looking great. You know, it's really sound. It's just for folks to kind of get an idea. This is kind of a classic barn with the boards on the side, big, you know, pine boards. They're weathered. So you kind of got this nice grayish, blondish hue to it. And then... again, we're on a deck here, which just feels a little Western to me, with a shed roof where they're able to like work out here. And there's all these like wooden barrels that are supporting all these frames to dry out the garlic. So it's just like, you know, it's just super cozy.
So we have the big old press, which is, I matched up with a photo from 1892-ish from Mount Gilead Press. We actually trucked from near Mount Gilead, Ohio, and this lovely old couple were getting out of the business and sold it to us for a song, and we restored it. And
that is a rack and cloth, like with two different sides that you kind of wheel back and forth, and it has the elevator chute. And
it's an oak frame, a lot of cast iron components. We actually recently replaced the original hydraulic pump because I was just getting sick of leaky leather gaskets, which...
just totally ruins the ambiance.
Right? Squirting hydraulic oil everywhere.
Kidding.
That's no good.
And you painted it red.
Yes.
You know, I haven't really seen that, and I kind of like it. It's not red
metal. It's red wood, and it's just showcased right in the barn, which is lovely.
And that back door opens up the full width of that press, so you know, after a pressing, we can keep pushing the racks towards the back and unload our pomace right out the back door into containers out there that get hopefully moved to another part of the farm, spread around.
That's smart. I mean, that's just working smart instead of hard, which is what it's all about.
There are a lot of apple seedlings out there.
Hey, you never know what will happen with them. I'm kind of curious. I want to just stop at this juncture. Like, so you've been in this for a while, you know, starting in Ireland, coming here, really, you know, locking your roots down in Hadley for sure. You know, it's pretty obvious. What are you thinking? Like, dang, I wish I knew this back then. Is there any of those kind of like things that kind of come to mind straight away? And Jonathan is shaking his head a little bit.
Well, my biggest regret is not when we planted our first 1,500 trees. We got a big farm loan from the government to cover it, and we were sort of like, let's get this going. And I actually didn't take the time to like plow down all the fields really, really well and get rid of the poison ivy.
Oh,
I should have taken 2 years. And bare fallowed those fields and got rid of all the poison ivy.
Poison ivy.
Yeah. So it's wicked up there.
Yeah.
And that's like my personal biggest regret. But but honestly, we didn't even know it was going to be that horrible. So I guess it's like, you know,
what else can you do about it? Yeah. You don't want to put chemicals on it in your orchard, which would be really the only way to take care of it.
Other than plowing. Which we have done in subsequent new plantings, and it works great.
Mm.
We're like, because it makes it harder to attend to those trees, because we're a little less interested in going in there.
Oh, we're petrified. Yeah. It's like we're both allergic, so it's hard.
What about goats? Can they eat poison ivy?
They can, and sheep can too, but they're selective. They're not like, you know, going to eat all of it. They have other things they'd rather eat first, then you're going to move them on. So it's not going to get rid of it. It'll help tamp it down, which is we are seeing that with the sheep. They are going through those blocks that are really poison ivied, and they're definitely helping.
Let's talk a little bit about cider.
Yes.
So it's a big part of what you're doing, it's called the Carr's Cider House.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the cider syrup. Let's first start about your journey into cider. Just a little bit of that. Where did that start?
Kind of in Ireland, right?
It did.
So we were there for 5 years. They still make cider in Ireland. We traveled in England a bit, in France. And, you know, they have cider cultures there.
They sure do.
Yeah. Really amazing ones.
But before we even moved to Ireland, and I love telling this story because I think it's just one of those like little serendipitous things. Our first date that we went on, which was in San Francisco, was at Ticu's. I don't know. You know San Francisco? It is a crepe and cider place.
I did not know that, but and, I'm sure it's still there.
Yeah. And we're like, I'll take them to this place, you know. And yeah, so we like had cider on our first date, which I thought really, you know, we had no idea at that moment.
So that was it. Started at the little creperie and little cider and dated, and then here you are.
And we moved to this area, and
I got really excited about both the old American traditions of cider making and the European ones, and so that's why we planted, you know, half American apples and half English cider apples, and it's been neat to watch people like our farming partner Matt Kaminsky and his other business kind of like start to try to rediscover some native wild apples and their potential for developing like our own unique tannic acidic cider apples that are from here and adapted to this country and have their own unique qualities. So
we should probably say Matt is probably well known as
Gnarly Pippin,
Mr. Gnarly Pippin.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, which is cool. I mean, talk about people you surround yourself with.
Right. So that's the Matt we're talking about also.
Who does the sheep.
Okay.
And his partner. And many other things. Guys are like another whirlwind of ideas. That's a great collaboration because a lot of our hard ciders are made with wild foraged apples that Matt gets for us. And he's got like a finger in every sort of backyard and small orchard and wild patch all around the state and beyond. So he gets us a lot of wild fruit. And so it's been really useful to blend with some of these bittersweet English apples, of which we have two. So it adds the acidity to balance them out. Mm-hmm. We went on like a full like wild yeast only kick for a couple of years. And we had some like amazing results, and we had some like frustrating results where the funkiness was just like out of control. And you know, and then sometimes it was like the most beautiful ethereal cider of our dreams. Right. Yeah, but and so it was like, but it got a little tricky. So what we've backpedaled a little on that and decided that we're doing like what are essentially hybrid fermentations, where we don't sulfite at all, and we'll let the natural yeast sort of get off to their start, and then we'll also pitch a commercial strain. It's usually like a cool temp white wine yeast, like Steinberg or Osmanhausen. And so, but we've played around with some Vino Verde yeast this last fall to add to the wild yeasts. And so then we get like the best of both worlds, where you get the commercial yeast usually does the mop-up work and like finishes strong. And the wild yeasties get, you know, add something from the beginning of the fermentation.
It's glass bottles, corked bottles. You're not force carbonating at all.
No. We add a little bit of CO2 to kind of drive out some of the air in the bottles, but they're not, they're just like, there's a tingle on it, but there's not.
It pushes from the tank to run the bottling line with CO2. And also it's kind of, it's like a little important for degassing, pushing out the oxygen since we're no sulfite. So it's like a little way to give the cider some protection.
A little protection.
It's like low tech cider, but it's also low energy cider.
It's craft cider. It's artisanal.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, low tech is the way to like get to craft.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, otherwise we call it modern. You know, so it's kind of the perfect little reality in that way.
Yeah. So we're gonna start with the white jersey.
You'll see all of our bottles are the same, and we usually put hang tags on them to differentiate them, and maybe some tape on the top, because we're really trying to encourage people, obviously this is for local folks, to return their bottles, and then we'll wash them and reuse them.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to open the golden russet. And this is our Dabinette, which is just out of the, just about to get bottled, so it's not even corked. But
first one is
white jersey.
White jersey. Okay, this is a white jersey right here.
Wild apples, yeah.
Yeah.
And this is...
this is golden russet, and then this is Dabinette. So those are the main stars in the blends, but they're all blends.
Dabinette, okay.
But a serious amount of each. It's not like we put a Dabinette apple in there and call it a Dabinette. It's like
I'll tell you the percentage. Here's the white jersey. So this is an interesting one because it's the white jersey apple itself is. It doesn't actually taste like much in the orchard even, but when you press it, the tannins just pop out of it. But it has almost no acid, so that's why we need to blend it with about 50% wild apples. And so this one was, it's like the wild slash Vino Verde.
Cheers.
I'm
just going to like swallow that nose a little bit. It's your terroir right there. It's just like, and the apple is also... very aromatic.
Pretty happy with the balance in this. It's got a really big tannic finish, a lot of like fresh fruit on the nose, and there's like a lot to chew on afterwards. So this is the russet, and this is
totally
about
different.
This is about 80% golden russet, 20% gold rush, which we also grow, but I kind of hate it as a tree, not as an apple. It's just a wimpy tree.
What are you getting for like ABVs on your cider?
This is probably pushing 9. The russet really sugars up here in the sandy soil.
Yeasty on the nose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. I like it because, again, it's it's very craft. Mm-hmm. I drove up this dirt road to come here, and I could kind of, you know, experience the whole imagery. It just brings me right into it, that. I love it. And there's like a little bit of that kind of nice funkiness of the yeast, because that's you're playing with the wild yeast and it's leaving its mark,
right.
Which is beautiful. I mean, why would you want to take that out of your cider?
Here's another factor is that the fermentation temperature, because we don't we can't crash the temps with glycol chillers here. We're just in a barn. The White Jersey, we press in early September. Sometimes it's still like 90.
Yeah.
And so the ambient fermentation temperature is hot. And you can't the research I've done and my personal opinion is that warm temps lead to sort of bacterial activity. And so anyway, it's so that's something that can get a little out of hand. With the ciders we press in colder times of year, I think the wild fermentations are more manageable because it just selects more for yeast at low temperature.
And so, I like how, it's a nice dry cider. It has a nice drop back. I'm talking about the russet right now. It really has that. The Jersey was just like insanely beautiful. I love the aromatics of this. The golden russet, it's a little bit more subdued. It's kind of like, I'm going to enter into your mouth and make you say hello to me. You have to like think about it a little bit because it's dropping back, there's dryness, and in that it opens up, it opens up a world. And that's where sweetness can really hide it.
Yeah, I agree.
And the dryness really like, it's like in an open, al fresco, here we are, it's perfect.
This one to me also changes so much when you're having it with food.
Oh, I could see that, yeah.
And it is like, never ceases to amaze me how that transformation happens. So you don't even know what you're gonna like what to expect. So you're like drinking, it's like, and then you're like, whoa, this is perfect with this. And that I can tell just from the experience from these like kind of past few years of our ciders, like that one in about a month and a half or two is going to be like totally different. It's like a little young, but like expressing a lot of the things that's to come. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see if I'm right.
So this is the Dabinette, which is like big, earthy, deep. Tannins and all kinds of things going on in it.
This is like mixing up everything in this cup here right now. I'm like getting so much on the nose.
This is probably the most complex cider. That's why I saved it for last. Yeah. It's about 50% Dabinette, which honestly is as much as you need because that apple is out of control. But it needs some acid. And so, again, there's wild apples in here as well to lift it.
Yeah, like a nice little sweetness on the edge, huh?
If I told you this was aged in oak for even a little bit, would you believe me? I would. If you told me that, I'd believe it, even though I know it hasn't been because I've been here. But there is, like, that vanilla kind of quality. That's that sweet thing at the end, I feel like.
And the nose had that, like, little bit of caramel apple on the nose, too.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Like, each of these three ciders are so diverse, which is really beautiful. I mean, they should be, right? But there is like a complexity to each. And I have tasted your cider like way back and now, and it's like, baby, you have come a long way.
Thanks.
You really have come a long way. And what I've seen is like this subtlety that you're doing now, where you're really projecting the apple and allowing it to dance in the bottle and allowing it to like ferment to dry and really showcasing it. And I just can't say over and over again, I mean, the terroir here is like fantastic. And also your energy is fantastic, and you can taste that in the too.
Thank you. And
you're fermenting in this barn, so like we are in like the perfect situation of just being right on site where you're drinking it. There's just nothing. You have to visit the cider makers. You got to come to Carr's Cider House.
Thanks. Hopefully, you'll be able to come to Carr's Cider House.
This
Preservation
fall.
Orchard.
Legally.
Legally, yeah.
Like, well, you can. You can go to the kiosk and we'll
yes,
keep
you
everybody
can.
Posted on
That's
that.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. You can always take a walk up here.
And so, I mean, just for fun, I wanted to put all these three ciders together because it's really interesting. Post-fermentative blending is just pretty wild, and the way you can. So we're considering like making like a maritage type, and just seeing if. But you could be the first one to assess the prospects.
Because
we haven't together.
Yeah, so I'm gonna. Maybe.
Which we have been doing in the glass because you haven't been rinsing our glasses.
Oh, that's
so
true.
I've been getting a little bit of it, but
I'm gonna do a half pour of each. And so here, I'll start you, Nicole.
Thanks.
And then we'll have to swirl it around our glasses. And then knowing what we have tasted prior and then kind of just seeing, is it like more than the sum of the parts or is it...
It will be totally...
Or can we just...
Or like, is there one that's going to like assert
itself? Well, one could dominate or we could just be like, oh, we taste each three in sequence now that we know what they taste like individually. We try to get the press blend to a good place where we want, you know, get the acids high enough and so forth with the bittersweet apples. But well, actually, one of the best ciders I ever made, and this is a true story, comes from a whole bunch of leftover ciders I had that I barreled up and left in the corner as like a reject barrel.
But it was like dregs.
It was the blends of like, you know, three or four or five different ciders. And then
forgot about it.
We're like, oh, let's taste this again. And I'm like, holy moly.
Yeah. So it had aged a little bit, you know, like 6 months or something. And yeah.
Nice. Okay.
I smell the russet.
Yeah, it's the nose is a lot. I mean, obviously, it's quite a few apples in here, but interesting. I think it brings more tannins to the mid palate for me rather than the finish. There's something about like the it's very like strong in the middle there.
A little bit of tartness coming through. Yeah. It's a little bit more pronounced this time around. And I hear what you're saying, the mid-palate.
But it's quite balanced. Like there's a...
Absolutely.
So there we go, blending.
Yeah, blending. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really kind of like brightened it a little bit overall.
Yeah.
Totally works. I don't know why you would need to unless you have like ample, because I think it's really nice that you have the ciders available in defined varieties. Mm-hmm. But... I don't know. Actually, I'm going to take that back. I think mixing it would be really friggin' great. Mm. Like, this makes it a much, sometimes even more approachable cider in a way.
Because it's really... something for everyone?
There's a cider for everyone, no doubt. No doubt.
And I mean, you know, if you read the classic cider making texts, you know, from John Warledge to Long Ashton to... Thomas Hardy even makes quite a few references to cider in his... My father's a big Thomas Hardy fan, and this is actually the only reason I know it, is that every time he reads a reference to cider in Thomas Hardy, he sends me the passage. But, you know, they were quite deliberate in their press blends as to what would make a really good cider. Mm-hmm. And a little of this for body, a little of this for acid, a little of this for tannins. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. It definitely has made it like a real much brighter cider.
Mm-hmm.
Really,
yeah,
you know, crisp, more tartness kind of coming through. It's very refreshing, very refreshing.
Yeah. Mm. So I think we should do a blend together. But it's just like, you know, like you were saying, Ria, it's like really interesting to actually taste them like individually.
Yeah.
But then
educational,
right? Educational,
and they were
sure.
good. Yeah. I like them individually. I was like, whoa, that Jersey was just like, you know,
yeah.
Hide away up by the chestnut tree and, you know.
Have a little, then have a little nap.
So they say, you know. Really nice, really nice. Well, you're doing some nice work here. And
Thank you.
I'm so impressed in how you're doing it, too, in your setting. You know, you're really making it work. And it's New England, you know. This is 100% New England here. It's like you feel the richness of our history in this area. So I really appreciate that, you sharing that.
You know, it's interesting when you read a lot of, like, if you read Beach or at least these writers who talk about how apples being suited to particular soils. And it's funny because the golden russet is known kind of as a sharp with a lot of sugar. But, like, in our situation, on sandy, dry soil, it's not true. And that's why we put the gold rush in there to lift it up. Mm-hmm. And like we've done 100% golden russet and I've been like, no, this actually needs to.
It makes a little bit.
Yeah.
A little
so, push. It's interesting just to whatever, just read something and then try it in your own site and then be like, well,
nope.
There's more to it than that.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Well, I want to make sure that we talk about the cookbook. The full name of the cookbook is Cider House Cookbook, 127 Recipes That Celebrate the Sweet, Tart, Tangy, flavors of apple cider.
Yes.
You're both on as authors, and your sister is too.
Mm-hmm.
This book is a really masterpiece of all these amazing recipes.
Thanks, Rhea.
Thank you. Let's
talk a little bit about that. And also, photos are incredible.
Yeah, they really were. Gosh.
So I want to ask you, just like, is there a favorite recipe out of the cookbook? If people were going to go to, like, one that you would be like, dang, you know?
I think the recipe that we first wrote, where we had to, like, figure out exactly how somebody else could replicate it, was the scallop in cider with the cider syrup glaze. And I look through the book, and I often open it to a page in the shop so people can, like, see that. And, like, it's usually this kale salad with all these different things in it. Like, and it's so New England. It's, like, you know, roasted squash, like, winter squash chips and pumpkin seeds and all these things that we would grow here. And like textures and flavors, and it has like the cider syrup vinaigrette, and so it's like that's probably the page I open to the most. So that's kind of like, is it my favorite recipe? I do make that a lot in the winter or the fall.
My God, roasted vegetables with cider, that's one of the things that we're looking for at the dinner.
Yeah,
is have like a roasted vegetable piece, because it's so lovely paired with cider.
Oh, absolutely. With you can even make a reduction of hard cider, boiled down and sweetened hard cider makes a hard cider syrup, which is not like cider syrup. It's totally different. It's savory and so interesting. And like that over like roasted carrots, it's so good.
Mm-hmm. It could be found online. It could be found at Carr Cider House here, coming here. And actually, all your products could be found online, right?
Yeah. We sell directly. We have a little online shop at carciderhouse.com. And then
and we ship anywhere across the country, but only not the alcohol, because that is a bizarro labyrinth of red tape.
Yes. Yeah, so you'll have to come here for that. I did try that one.
To be able to come here.
Exactly. Yeah. And then there are other, you know, there are shops around the country too that have ordered from us, like some of our pantry products and cookbook. And the cookbook obviously at your independent bookseller.
Mm-hmm.
And they can get it easily enough. It's through Story Publishing, who publishes a
wonderful,
incredible
books,
number of books. Yeah.
Yeah.
About so that, how to make things.
That was quite a project to take on. I mean, I just want to, you know, I'm an author myself, so I'm kind of wondering, like, what made you say, I'm going to do a cookbook?
They're like, oh, we have like four recipes. Maybe we should do a cookbook. And my sister also, like, I wanted to mention my sister Andrea Blum, who has worked in food for years and years. And we're like, oh, it'll be great to like get her take on it. And so she contributed a lot of recipes as well. A lot of the meat recipes were from her.
You know, you kind of are seen as like the Martha Stewart of cider in that way.
Oh, gosh.
Because you have this, and that's as a compliment, because you have all these like nice ways that you kind of integrate not only cider, but the food and the aesthetic and the value added. Right. So, I mean,
only
that's
we're
how
doing
I see
it on a like a shoestring, as
I
suppose.
Know. Well, you know, you have to start, all great works start from a blank page, right?
But, yeah.
So it's kind of how I see you.
It's true, it's true. I do see her as the Martha Stewart, because, I mean, shoot, they have the cookbook. They have all these value-added products that are surrounding cider. They have the cider itself, which is fantastic. In fact, I heard confirmation from Nicole that she's looking at the Dabinette to bring that for the cider dinner at Cider Days 2.0. So a lot could change between now and November. She might say, oh, it's kind of changed a bit, so I won't hold her to that too much, but it sounds like it's kind of a sealed deal in her mind at this point. So that's really exciting. Another thing to be looking forward to. And make sure that when you are in the area, stop by the kiosk. It's open, 7 days a week. There's a number to call if nobody is there. And you can see all the different products that we're talking about on this here episode. What a lovely place. I cannot wait for that orchard tasting area to be open. Something to look forward to in the future. Well, Ciderville, I'm going to be rolling out of here. One more reminder to sign up for that e-cider news now. Go to ciderchat.com. You'll find a little button to press, and you could put in your detail and get details on the upcoming events at Cider Days 2.0 and early release ticket info. And before you know it, I'll be seeing you in November at that special event coming up. Wow. But for now, I leave you here. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Strange apples, bitter sharp. Strange apples, juicy and ripe. Who wants a tannin balm?
I want a tannin balm.
Who wants to pull them down?
I'm gonna pull them down. Hey, 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 apples, bittersweet.
Strange apples,
hanging high.
Got them strange apples.
Forget the pie.
Strange apples.
Squeeze them tight.
Got them
strange apples. Strange apples. Strange apples.
I want a tannin balm.
Who wants to pull them down?
I'm gonna pull them down. Hey, 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 apples.
Come and see. Plenty strange apples for you and me. Strange apples. Strange apples. Apples, make them pop.
Pop, pop, pop.
Ba-da, do-do-da. Pop, pop, pop. Ba-da, do-do-da. Pop, pop, pop. Ba-da, do-do-da. Pop, pop, pop. Pop, 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 pop.
Yee-haw!